Hello there. This week on the Radio Today programme, Lynn Bowles on leaving Radio 2 after 18 years doing the morning travel news. Trevor Dan talks to the Radio 3 controller Alan Davey about significant changes to the station's schedule. Plus James Cridland on whether radio is dead. And in David Lloyd's Radio Moments, memories of Paul Burnett joining Radio 1, the launches of Real Radio Yorkshire, 5 Live and Radio Caroline, and a decade of giggles thanks to Charlotte Green.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
But before all that, Radio Today founder and executive president Roy Martin is here.
Executive president, what kind of title is that?
That's what it says here. It's what Ashley calls himself, so it's fine. Our new format then on the podcast, it sees us hook up with some radio friends at the start of the podcast each week to catch up on some of the big talking points that the industry's been talking about this week and get our geek on. And by the magic of ISDN, we can talk this week to Capital South Wales breakfast duo Matt and Polly.
Woo, woo, yay! Hang on, Matt's frothing at the mouth at the fact we're going to geek on at the moment.
Matt and Polly.
Oh, they've got jingles, Roy. We need our own jingles.
You need a jingle.
What did you label Roy as, Dan?
Executive president.
We are the executive presidents of Capital South Wales.
Yeah, in the morning.
I think your boss might have something to say with that. We've got serious stuff coming up later. Interviews, packages, actual important discussions about radio. Stay tuned for all of that. But before that, we're going to play a little quiz very soon. And we're just going to talk about stuff that's been going on in radio this week. And Mr. Roy, we've been busy on Radio Today Live because it's been the IRNs. It's been the Hospital Radio Awards as well.
It has. And of course, this time last week, we were broadcasting live from Vienna, which seems like forever ago, but it is just 7 days ago. So it's all been happening. And as I mentioned in the Ramble this week in eRadio, lots more coming up. The Student Radio Conference next week. We've got the Radio Festival within about 6-7 weeks, I think, and lots of other things going on as well. So, yeah, it's very busy at the moment.
Trains and hotels just booked for the Radio Festival. Lauren Laverne announced this week as the host. Matt and Polly, have you ever been to the Radio Festival?
No, because it usually happens on a kind of a... and I'm gutted about this, because it happens on... It starts on a weekday, doesn't it? It's never across a weekend. We're always, like, working on breakfast, so we can't get to it. Unless it, of course, comes to Wales one day, which would be nice.
They could give you the week off to go. That would be good.
Well, I value money.
Or we could get you on a panel, get you talking on the stage, and then you're working.
Are you on about the SRA conference? I think I'm going to be talking on the Friday there in Norwich.
Can I say also, you mentioned the Hospital Radio was there. I need to give a big shout out to Hospital Radio, because genuine, I have a lot of love for those stations, because that's where I started my career. I mean, a lot of people, you know, bang on about the student radio and stuff, which is great. But I and a lot of people in my position have started at Hospital Radio, so we've got a lot to owe to Hospital Radio. So big shout out to you guys.
I started on Hospital Radio as well, and so did Roy. Roy got sacked from Hospital Radio.
Why? What did you do?
I don't quite know what I did, but it's a very long story, and I probably don't want to bore you
for another podcast.
Yes.
I used to get told off for not visiting the wards, and I'm not here to visit sick people. I want to do radio. You know what I mean? I'm sorry, I'm not going to go up on the wards and get MRSA.
Something else we've been covering on Radio Today this week is the definition of new music, because Ofcom have decided what new music is and told Radio 1 and Radio 2 how much they've got to play. Ofcom have said it's a track considered to be new music for a period of either 12 months from first release or 6 weeks from when it gets into the top 20, whichever sooner. So once it's been in the top 20 for 6 weeks, it's not considered new anymore. Do we think this is the right definition?
I'm with Radio Centre on this one. The very word new in radio, we don't have a good history with it. I mean, how many radio stations have been the new 96.2 for about 3 years? So we really need to work out what the word new means. And I think new should have as short a life as possible.
Now, you guys play new music all the time. Do you get sick of playing the same songs over and over again?
Well, never.
I was just about to say, just echoing what Roy said, do you remember when we first started Capital Breakfast, Matt, and we were the new Capital Breakfast show for about 6 months?
Well, yeah, but there's a reason for that, though, because it takes a while for it to bed.
I
think this is where I stand on the new music thing as well. Like, you can play a new song today to a listener. They don't hear it as often as we do. So that's, I don't know. And that's why we kind of reiterate that the new Capital Breakfast message for so long. It's because it takes a while to bed in, because listeners don't listen like we do.
Shall we listen to a radio fail?
Oh, go on then.
Yes,
it's not one of mine, is it?
I love a good radio fail.
So this is this week's radio fail from BBC Radio 2.
Love a boy. I'm so sorry. I just fell off my chair, literally. Just describe what happened, guest. That was the funniest thing ever. Sorry. We've got to get... Do you want to say what happened there?
Yes, of course. Should I say it now?
Yeah, what do I do?
Okay. Well, Jeremy's just fallen off his chair at the mention of period. He became hysterical.
It wasn't related to the subject matter. Yeah. I was just trying to... Okay, anyway. I think what I do, just to... I'm going to collect myself for a second, and we're discussing something very serious. So let me just play a trail, and then we'll get back to this item. But the chair rolled away. Can I just confirm that?
That's true.
I was trying to adjust the volume on the track.
Jeremy Vine falling off his chair.
I love that woman for saying that.
Why didn't he have the mics live when he fell off the chair? Because that would have been brilliant.
I know.
Talking of radio royalty or royalty, Matt, you've had a letter back from Prince Harry this week. I saw online.
Oh, right. So,
so excited.
So in January, I thought it would, because I'm a DJ as well. So I thought, let's write to Kensington Palace and offer my DJ services. So we did all this on the air and we built a storyline.
I actually wrote him the letter, the initial letter. Yeah. I thought, we'll take the mickey because there's no way they're ever going to receive the letter or there's no way they're ever going to, open the letter.
So we did this whole storyline on air, forgot about it, and then when we were away last week, we had a letter through the post from Kensington Palace, which obviously I wanted someone in the office to open whilst I was away, but then I was like, no, actually, we'll save this for Monday's show when we're back, and we'll do this big dramatic kind of opening. We've kind of built it up across the weekend. On the Monday morning then, at top of our 8 o'clock, we're like, yeah, keep listening, 10 minutes, we're opening up the envelope. Will it be an invite to the wedding? Will they be responding to my kind of DJ offer?
Matt received the letter the day that, it was all on Twitter that the royals had sent out these 600 invites to members of public. So we were like, oh, this is too much of a coincidence. So,
I mean, this is what's great about radio, because we did that top of hour teasing ahead, and then at 10 past we kind of set the whole thing up again, and then I was like, let's open up the envelope. Next. Yeah. And we played another song. So that's kind of a little tip there if you're getting into radio, like just an easy way to build those hours and keep people hooked. Just keep them waiting.
Definitely a nice show to come back to, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, and it turns out, by the way, that they turned me down.
Yes. An epic letter, though.
It was very good.
We were quite... Harry says he was touched by the letter. We were touched by the response.
We were.
You said you've been away. You've been East Coast and West Coast. Matt, you've been in LA, and Polly, you've been in Florida.
Yeah, it was... my dad lives in Florida in a place called Tampa in Treasure Island, and so I go over there all the time to see him. And I took the opportunity to record my American radio episode for my podcast, for my radio podcast. And I'm obsessed with American radio. I absolutely love it. And I know Matt is exactly the same. So we were both... there was that one day, wasn't it? We were both listening and tweeting about American radio at the same time.
I was listening to Ryan Seacrest on Kiss.
Yeah.
And you had...
I had FLZ on.
You had FLZ on. And then, because we had a satellite radio in the car, so I was able to listen to my favourite, Z100, as well. So that was pretty cool. And I've been to Z100 as well. It's an absolute... You wouldn't believe, though, guys. You'd think Z100 would be like this amazing setup inside... like Capital is in London, or Heart, and the stations are really well designed. It's a really boring building.
No.
Like you wouldn't believe you're in Z100. But, a great experience to be there.
So we've been enjoying your podcast series, Polly. It's episode 6 out this week, and it's all about American radio.
I think it's episode 7.
Is it 7 already? Wow.
Link Connect, it's all about American radio. So, as I said, took the opportunity, because the only sort of friends that I know over in the States, obviously hang out with my dad, and, if my brothers and sisters come with me, that's great. But usually it's with the guys from the radio station, because when I first went over to Florida, it was about 10 or 11 years ago, and I remember hitting up the local sort of radio station there, FLZ, and saying, can I come and have a look around? I'm really interested in the radio industry. And we made friends. Every time I go over there, sitting on the shows, super geeky and really sad that I do that on my holidays. But I absolutely love it. I crave listening to American radio. I listen to the podcasts all the time, and I think it's super edgy and exciting and fun and everything that I'd love to do on British radio. But because of the regulations, we are a little bit tightened at the belt here. So I get my release of American radio when I'm over there, and I love it.
And I've really been enjoying your podcast. I like the entertainment one with Kevin and Pat Sharp and his story about Posh and Bex. And the Colin Murray one was really good. And the Australian guy last week from Kyle and Jackie O. Lots of use of the bleep there.
Yeah, I know. Well, for him, he was like, Matt obviously was on that one with me, with Pete, intern Pete from the Kyle and Jackie show over on Kiss in Sydney. And it was he just spoke as if he thought it was normal, like for a podcast or something that was going out in the public domain in Britain. But obviously we had to remind him that actually this is going to have to be bleeped quite a lot. But, for him, that's a normal thing for him to say I don't know if I can, he was saying arse and, you know, all these other words, which is normal to him. But for us, obviously, we're not allowed to say. You're going to have to bleep that now, aren't you?
Oh, arse is fine.
No, we are then.
Talking of sweary podcasts, I must do a quick plug for a new one that came out last week called Help, I Sexted My Boss. Have you heard this yet,
guys?
Oh,
I've heard about this. Is this Jordan North?
It is Jordan North from Radio 1 with William Hansen, etiquette expert. So it's kind of...
Yeah, we had him on the show yesterday.
It's an advice podcast and it's very funny. Episode 2 just came out, which is Help, I Accidentally Tweeted a Dick Pic.
I love it.
Which is all about Twitter etiquette.
We love William Hansen. We had him on the show this week to talk about royal etiquette.
That's great.
So anything he does, we love it.
But yeah, him and Jordan together, the combination just kind of works a dream. They're sat there with their gin and Dubonnet talking about problems. So definitely check that out. Right, we're going to try something new on the podcast this week. If it is good, it comes back next week. If it isn't, we will never mention it again, just like all dreadful radio features. And we're going to call it...
Pressure's on us now, Stu.
Yeah, pressure's on you. Yeah, I know. We're going to call it Stu versus Roy. Our guest or guest each week will ask us some geek questions to see who is the biggest anorak between me and Roy. Polly and Matt have got some questions ready for us. We just shout out our name, do we, Roy? Is that what we're going
to
do?
Yeah, I think so. Now you describe it, I think I actually want to lose. title.
Who's the biggest radio anorak?
It's got to be Stu, so we'll see how we get on.
Well, I've got my first question here, so should we delve
Crack
straight
on.
In?
Let's go.
All right, here we go. Marconi's first British radio message was sent in Wales. Now, the experiment witnessed a message transversed over the British Channel from Flatholme to Lavernock Point in Penarth, which is my hometown. Now, it was over a distance of 6 kilometres, but what was the message? Those three words.
This is London. From Wales.
This is heart.
This is heart.
Heart is coming.
I can tell you that. Yeah. Keep it capital. No, it was none of those things. It was actually, are you ready?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay, next question. What frequency is Capital South Wales' Newport transmitter on?
Stu.
97.4.
It's correct.
Wow, well done.
See, I was going to say, but then I forgot I had to say my name first. Never mind.
In 1920, the world's first commercial radio station went on air in America. What was it and what was the transmission area?
Stu, it was in Philadelphia.
Almost. City to the right.
It begins with a P, does it? No.
Yes, it does, and it is, and it is in Philadelphia.
Oh, I give up.
Right,
Roy, he's been on Google.
KDKA.
I was going to say it was well done. Oh, it's KDKA.
It's one all at the moment. Okay, so next question. My radio hero, Carl Sandilands. Right, what Australian city was Carl Sandilands' his first gig? What city in Australia?
Stu.
Where was his first radio gig? Stu.
Stu. Brisbane.
Brisbane is correct.
Oh, yes. Nice. Okay, how many Arkiva Awards have Matt and Polly won for the best breakfast show?
Roy.
Yes, Roy?
One.
Roy, ye have little faith.
We've won two.
I thought it was a trick question.
One, two, nominated for three. Yeah, glad he never said zero, right?
Still 2-1. Okay, what year did Capital South Wales launch?
Stu.
Roy.
Stu. It was 2014.
2014 is incorrect.
Oh,
Roy, 2010.
2010 is incorrect. It was 2011. It's still 2-1.
Oh, no, but that's it now.
No, that's
Stu,
it.
Stu, you are the winner.
Yeah. Well done, Stu.
Well done, Stu.
Geek of the week. Lucky.
I like that.
Do you think I might come back next week?
Oh, I think you should. I enjoyed that.
I like a good radio geek quiz.
Well, it's nice to talk to you, Matt and Polly. And
I'd love to speak to you too.
Yeah,
good luck with
absolutely.
The podcast and the show. Polly's podcast, 10 Things I Love About You, My Decade in Radio, available now from all good podcast providers. Episode 7 on American Radio out today. Thank you, guys. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Now, as Radio 3 announces major changes to its schedule, Trevor Dan visits controller Alan Davey to hear about a new late-night strand, new jazz and world music shows, and a new slot for drama.
So, Alan, Jim Moyer used to refer to changing the schedules of a network or a radio station as like coming into somebody's house while they're out and moving the furniture. And he said this because he expected all listeners to be a little bit discombobulated by any kind of change in schedules. Now, this is, by Radio 3 standards, I would think this is quite a fundamental change, isn't it? What were you thinking of when you started planning it?
I mean, the main thought behind what we're doing is actually making the schedule more readable to people so that they know much more what to expect. And that's the thought behind the Radio 3 After Dark concept for during the week.
That's your late night sort of umbrella.
That's our late night place of adventure. And we're saying very clearly at 10 o'clock, extraordinary things are going to happen. It's a place for adventurous music, adventurous ideas, adventurous discussions, things you might not expect. And we make that very, very clear. So if you stumble on it, you know you're in a different place. And Radio 3 After Dark has always been special, but we're now kind of saying, you know, you're now in the woods and listen out because whatever is going to happen, it's going to be exciting. And then, apart from that, Saturday Classics is a popular strand, but we're making it clearer now. We're calling it Inside Music, and the focus is going to be musicians talking about music they love, music they've performed, how hard it is, what it is to look out for from a musician's point of view, and giving you kind of many more insights that only musicians can give you. And I think hearing musicians talk about music in that way is really special. We're proud of our jazz programmes. J to Z, our
great title
program, very good. You have to practice saying it, and then it's natural. That's on Saturday evenings, and that's going to offer. Well, we hope it's going to offer kind of insight to newcomers to jazz, but also give those who know a lot about jazz inroads into the best of stuff that's going on in the jazz scene around this country at the moment. We've got Jazz Now on Mondays, which is going to be more cutting edge. Well, it's still pretty cutting edge because that's the way jazz is actually at the moment. But it'll also have, you know, some old favourites and some things that you might not have heard of. And we hope it'll be a perfect introduction to those who are jazz curious to come and find out more.
Is one of the big issues for you that your audience is very loyal and probably doesn't want a lot of change, and yet you have a mission to get new people to find not just the classical music, but also the world and the jazz and the other things that you do?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of our charter requirements, but it's our mission as a cultural radio station. You know, we're 80% classical music, but we're wider culture as well, and that's a real advantage. You can connect what's going on with the latest contemporary music with well-known classical music. You can have dramas that might illuminate some of the music that you've been playing, and everything can connect together. So that when we do, for example, as part of the After Dark Zone, we're having a season called Night Blossoms, looking at the interesting aspects of Japanese culture, we can do everything. We can have ideas, we can have poetry, we can have music, and really give the listener over that week a whole experience of sides of Japanese culture that they might not have come across or might not have even imagined that was interesting.
I find myself listening to more Radio 3 than I used to.
That's very good.
Well, it is good, isn't it? Is it because I'm getting old? I hope not. No, I think it's because I listen to more online, more on demand, because I'm not naturally an all-day-long classical music listener, but you do a lot of stuff at the margins that I can now seek out and listen to in my own time. I would imagine that the non-linear radio experience is now quite important for you, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's a very rich experience for us. So, I mean, Music Planet, it's maybe not the best time for everyone when it's on.
This is your world music strand.
It's our world music strand. It's going to be new revived with lots of postcards from particular countries using the World Service Network to get us into be able to see and hear particular cultures on the ground, as it were. And for some people, that might be on late at night on a Friday. It's not convenient, but on demand means you can listen to it on your commute or at your leisure.
And I guess that also means that it's liberating from a controller's point of view, because you don't have to think, is this music accessible to everybody? Because if we've chosen to listen to it, then we've already elected to go on that journey with you.
Yeah, and that's the theory behind the kind of three dimensions that the on-demand listening gives you. But, you know, we still have to make sure that the linear offer. People know where they are, know what to expect, and maybe know that they might want to get something on demand if this particular program's not to their particular taste or mood at the time. The mixtape, for example, which we have at 7 o'clock each weekday evening, if you want to download that, it's perfect for a kind of moderate commute. But if you've got a really long journey, you can download 6 hours of music from through the night, and then you've got, you know, a whole span of stuff to keep you entertained, enthralled and interested.
One of the other things you've done is you've changed the slot for drama. Why? And if I may ask a second question, what is different about Radio 3 drama that we don't get from Radio 4 drama?
Well, we've changed the time of drama to 7:30 Sunday evenings because every day of the week we present an event at 7:30. Monday to Friday it's a live concert. It's either live that night or it's recorded very recently, so we get the best concerts that are on at the moment. Saturday night it's live at the Opera. And previously we were producing dramas on Sunday and putting them on at 9 o'clock, but really that's the big event of the evening. These wonderful specially commissioned dramas, specially made dramas, of European classics, of world classics, plays that we do completely, and that's the main difference between us and Radio 4. We let the dramas go on for as long as they need to. We'll go on for hours and be able to do the drama complete, whereas Radio 4 have to have slots and therefore have to sometimes abridge things. But it's the range of drama that's also special for Radio 3, discovering new European work, looking again at familiar classics and trying to do them in new ways, or just things that haven't been done before, like we did the Volsunga saga, the kind of old Icelandic sagas that are behind Wagner, and they've never been done on the radio before, and we thought we would.
Now, unlike your colleagues as controller, you don't have a second station, do you? You don't have your version of One Extra or Six Music or Four Extra or Five Live Sports Extra. There is no Radio 3 Extra. Do you wish you had one of those?
I could always play with an extra channel. which controller wouldn't? But the online stuff that we offer just offers that extra dimension as well, and will allow listeners, because, you know, I sometimes think Radio 3 is like a really good festival, and there's so much in it that you need to sometimes take the time to listen again or just explore the things that you've missed.
You mentioned festivals. I was going to ask you about the bigger weekend, because you're participating
biggest.
In... Biggest weekend, I beg its pardon. It's ratcheted up again. But you're participating in that as part of BBC Music. How helpful is that whole BBC Music name on top of your channel name?
Oh, it's really helpful to us, actually, because it means we're part of this bigger family of BBC Music and what BBC's doing for music across the whole set of networks. Because, you know, in classical music, we invest in young talent hugely, just like we do in pop music. And actually, if you're all kind of involved in this game of contributing to the music industry, some wonderful, you know, juxtapositions can come out.
There are some more synergies because of BBC Music than I guess there used to be.
Yeah, so last year, the BBC Philharmonic Orchestra joined with Radio 1 for the 1975. And, you know, there's been other examples of that where, say, the orchestras who traditionally play on Radio 3 have actually gone with other networks to explore exciting things.
Alan, have you seen your Wikipedia page?
I shall not look at it.
Well, shall I tell you what it says? It says, Alan Davy, civil servant.
Oh, now, that was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. And I was thinking, that's not fair, really.
Yeah, I don't know how you get that changed.
But you've been here for 3 years now. I'm just wondering whether you think you've now adapted to the BBC. Because when I first met you, I think there was a slight sense of OMG.
Well, you know, BBC is a big organisation. It works in the way big organisations do. And to answer your question, yeah, I think I've got the measure of how it works now and how we get things done.
Did you grow up listening to classical music?
I grew up listening to all kinds of music, but classical I discovered kind of late teens by buying an LP in Woolworths, Mahler 4th Horenstein, ooh, yes, and just getting into it, and then finding Radio 3 that way, and then arrived at university. Simon Rattle had just arrived in Birmingham. It was a perfect place to discover classical music.
Because the reason I ask you this is there'll be people listening to this podcast, yeah, who only listen to popular, yeah, music, or perhaps, yeah, they only listen to speech. What's the way in? If you know, if you've got somebody in front of you who says, I don't get this classical music, Alan, where should they start?
Well, I grew up loving pop songs. I was a kind of nerdy punk, but also like the Beach Boys, the Beatles, the Kinks. Those perfect three-minute worlds where you have a whole lot of emotion, good tunes, something that latches onto you, imaginative sounds, particularly those recordings. And I think classical music offers you that and more across a much bigger canvas. And it gives you even more depth and more to explore. So I think for me it was an easy, you know, comparing Elvis Costello to a Schubert string quartet, it wasn't much of a leap for me, because in Schubert you've got the drama, you've got emotion, you've got intensity that goes down. You had that in Elvis Costello as well, or even the Buzzcocks.
So if I'm a Justin Bieber or Taylor Swift fan, what's the record I should go and... Well, I was going to say record I should buy, because they wouldn't buy a record, would they? What should I download or find on Spotify?
Well, that's a really difficult question. I'd actually look at Schubert songs.
Nothing wrong with that.
They're short, they're deep. Get the lyrics downloaded as well, if they're in German, although there's some English versions. They've got immersion, they've got tunefulness, skilled musicianship in their execution. And I think that's a good win. There's a wonderful classical guitarist called Sean Schieber, who was a New Generation artist. He's just done a wonderful record of Walton, Britten, Dowland, and all that kind of stuff. And that's a real way into classical guitar. Melodies, all kinds of stuff.
I think we should have a listen to some of that, don't you? Okay, Alan Davey, sure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Is Alan Davey talking to our own Trevor Dan. There'll be more from Trevor in future weeks here on the Radio Today programme, where next we move from Old Broadcasting House to Wogan House to hear from the Totty from Splotty, as Terry used to call her.
Phone calls, social media, SMS, email, codec control and visualisation through the same interface. Phone box from Broadcast Bionics. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
Yes, it is the Radio Today programme, and our main guest this week had a little something to share with the Radio 2 audience a couple of weeks ago.
I'm afraid I have a small announcement to make, Ken.
Stand back.
Come on, pull yourself together. I'm afraid I'm going to be leaving Radio 2.
Lynn.
Yes.
Is it something I said?
Well, it's been several... You've been trying to get rid of me for years, Ken. I thought you'd be pleased.
Well, you've ruined the next minute in my life.
Usually you just say, you've ruined my life to me when I walk in.
That's just walking in. But this is, you know, it's spoiling my whole 54, you know.
You'll be fine. My last day will be Maundy Thursday, which is, I think, March the 29th.
It is. Well, we are actually devastated, all of us, to hear this news. We are. We'll get over it, of course.
Oh, of course you will.
Well, I'm delighted to say Lynn Bowles joins us on the podcast this week. Welcome to the Radio Today programme.
Hello, is this thing on?
Yeah, it appears to be. Thanks for coming on, Lynn. You're leaving Radio 2 this week after 186 years. So it says here on this bit of paper that Ken Bruce has given me. What's the reaction been like since you told listeners you were leaving?
The reaction has been, and I'm going to be completely honest, completely astounding to me. I have been genuinely, properly shocked by the reaction of people to my leaving Radio 2.
What kind of things have they been saying to you? Obviously, you've had a lot of reaction on Twitter that you would get these days that perhaps 20 years ago you wouldn't have seen that on postcards.
No, you definitely... Twitter is so marvellous, isn't it, for people just being able to get in touch and say, sorry, just sorry you're going. And it obviously shocked a lot of people. And just really lovely comments and people saying, oh, you've been part of our day, part of Radio 2 for so long, which I hate it when they say that, so long. I obviously have been a part of their lives because I have been sitting on their Kellogg's cornflakes now for so very long, for 18 years. It's quite something really, isn't it?
And you're a bit more than just the travel newsreader because you get involved with the banter, especially with Ken.
Yes, and that's, to be entirely honest with you, that was what I was brought in to do. I can do the traffic news. I'm not bad at the old traffic news. I've been doing that for a while. But they did want someone to talk to Ken because, goodness love him, he's on his own in that room. He gets locked up in that room every morning. And I'm the only one, obviously, I'm the only one that can go in. I go in with a cattle prod, obviously, and some raw meat to keep him at bay. But being genuine now for once, being honest, again, he has to think of everything he says on the radio. You know, he has to come up with all of this stuff. And I'm just there to help, really. I dig the big holes or fill in the big holes that I'm his labourer, really. That's what he thinks I am.
4th of April, Belfast, if you can get there, do. Here's Lynn Bowles.
Hello, Ken Bruce.
Can you get there?
I don't...
Well, you'll not be doing much else by the 4th of April.
Oh, thanks for that, Ken.
Time hanging heavily on your hands.
Not in demand, Bowles, are we?
Sitting waiting for the phone. Is it still working?
Pick just it up. Just a little
yeah, that's all right. Seems to be
funny.
Okay.
No
yeah.
one's called. Yeah, well, I know you won't.
He never writes. He never calls. Yeah, but you'll know that I'm with you in spirit. I'm thinking of you warmly.
What a load of old rubbish.
When I'm awake. Well, some of the time I'm awake.
When are you awake again?
Sorry?
Yes, exactly. M80, northbound at Junction 4, the M73.
And when you first started at Radio 2, I think you were just doing Ken and Sarah Kennedy, weren't you? You weren't originally on Wake Up to Wogan, is that right?
No, that's right, because Wogan had his newsreaders. They had always read out the traffic news for him. And because I was there, it's like, oh, well, Lynn's here. She can write it for them. So I did that. That was fine. And I also just wrote it for Sarah as well. But I just put a lot of Welsh names in there. And in the end, they gave up and realised that I was making a job for myself and that I would have to read it as well. I sneaked in an awful lot of Welsh names that nobody could say apart from me.
It's probably, 10 years now since Boggy Marsh retired and you joined
yes.
Wake Up to Wogan. How was it yeah. going into a yeah. show where there were all those existing characters who were obviously part of the Wogan gang?
You know what was really interesting about working on the Wogan show is from day one, when I would sit in the corridor with a typewriter and a pen, writing the reports of someone else to read, I was already part of the team. They welcomed me with open arms. They were just lovely. And it was never a case of I was the one outside writing stuff. I was completely a member of the team from day one. So actually just moving on air wasn't that difficult. I mean, the first day when I turned up, rocked up to just write it, was a little bit scary because it was Wogan, for heaven's sake. But he was so disarming and so lovely and so charming that you'd immediately forget that he was a giant of broadcasting and you were just one of the kids around, and it was all fine.
Before you were at Radio 2, I think you were on 5 Live Drive with John Inverdale, weren't you? Before that, LBC. So you've been around radio for, what, nearly 30 years now?
Yeah, 275 time. Years now.
How did you get started at LBC in the first place?
Well, that was the problem. You see, it's all LBC's fault, to be honest with you. A bloke called Richard Littlejohn, I was employed to do the daytime traffic news on LBC. And I don't know if you know of this character, Richard Littlejohn, but he would say some things to me. He would say things. And what threw him was he never threw me. He would say things and I've got a bit of a smart mouth, so I said things back. And when, and that, I suppose that marked me out, should we say. And when Radio 5 Live were going to relaunch, because originally, as you know, it was a children's station, then it turned into a news and sports station. They needed someone to talk to John Inverdale, and the producer there, you know, said, oh, why, Bolsey will do it. She's not thrown by anything, you know. Because what they need you to do, because you will know you work in radio, traffic news on Radio 5 Live at that point was on every 15 minutes. And the idea is that they've got about a minute of me talking and then a trail, and it allows them to panic and decide what they're going to do next. That's all it is. It's just a gap for panicking, for producers to panic and put, what are we doing next while she's on? Keep her talking, for heaven's sake.
But it is a skill, and I know this because I worked at Roadwatch in the 90s and I do the travel news sometimes on 5 Live as well. When there is so much on your INRIC screen, how do you decide which 45 seconds, which minute to use?
Well, it's just because I've been doing it a very, very long time, Stuart. I've just got to go with the big stuff. I'm doing the whole of Britain. I mark out the really big stuff, the big motorways, the closures, the stuff that's causing major problems. And then, of course, I get people shouting in my ear how long I'm allowed to talk for. That can be a big problem then, because if you've got a lot of stuff going on, I'm just racing through it in the hope that someone's picking up something I'm saying.
And more so than other stations, Radio 2 has a lot of people who ring in and tell you about stuff. And often with names.
Strange names, and people with strange names from strange sounding places. And they are magnificent because if you do traffic news, you will know, sometimes the story isn't entirely certain. It's not entirely clear what's going on. So it is lovely that Unicorn Dawn says, you know what's happening here, Lynn? There's one lane closed and all of that. And then someone, Swedish Blue is a regular. I don't ask. He's a regular. So he'll say, oh, it's because of this, or there's a heck of a queue, or even as good as saying, it's not causing a problem, then you're all right. And they are magnificent and really, really important to us.
And it's an important part of what Radio 2 does still, even in an age where people are getting their travel news from their sat-nav or from their phone. And it's a kind of testament to you and to Radio 2 that it's still as prominent as it is.
Well, that's very kind of you to say so. I think it joins us all together, to be honest with you. I think it's quite interesting to hear about everywhere else in the country. And you think, yes, I'm part of the whole of the UK. I'm part of what's going on here. And it's interesting to hear, if you're in basking in lovely weather, to hear that someone else is, there's 18 foot of snow, or vice versa. It's just good to know what else is going on in the country. I think that's the best thing about Radio 2 is, I believe we link up the nation. I always think everyone's listening.
And there's a story that goes, you once caused a traffic jam on the M25 while doing the travel news. Is that right?
That was 5 Live, yes. For all 5 Live's fault. And they decided it was a brilliant idea to have, in the early days of 5 Live, they decided, I know what we'll do. It was the classic, send the traffic person out to, a major motorway to a service station. So we did that. And then they decided that I should broadcast whilst on the move on the M25. And there was a slight technical hitch with this. We ended up having to do quite a low speed. So we were, I know it's ridiculous, isn't it? So we were in like a people carrier, and the driver, we were saying, you're going to have to slow down, we're breaking up. They weren't picking up our signal or something. So we were getting slower and slower and slower. And then people realised it was us. And we just had this enormous traffic jam behind us. And I couldn't help but think, this is ridiculous. I'm actually causing a traffic jam on the M25 here.
Lynn, the last few years, you've obviously been presenting at BBC Radio Wales as well. Tell us about your show on a Sunday there.
Oh, I'm so pleased to do my show for BBC Radio Wales. It's such good fun. It's very much like me. It's a great mix of music in that it's very like Radio 2. Radio Wales is very like that. But I do love to interview people. I do love to talk to people. And we've had some brilliant interviewees. In my most recent one was Michelle Gale. I don't know if you remember her as Hattie in EastEnders. Mm. And she started in Grange Hill. And now she's, she was a big pop star. And now she's in West End musicals. And I just love to talk. Because you can just... Well, you know this, Stuart. You can just ask me anything, can't you? And you can find out all about people. It's just... I'm a very, very nosy person, Stuart.
And I didn't drink for such a long time. I was teetotal. So were most people losing hours, like hungover?
You're kidding.
I had extra hours, didn't I? Like most people hungover.
Early on a Sunday morning, you were up there writing.
I was up. I was up. So,
are you serious? Yeah, do you think that you. Helped?
Yeah, I think massively. Yeah, I honestly, now that I look back, think that was a massive part in what allowed me to develop my writing, because I wasn't hungover on a Saturday or Sunday. Mm-hmm. So I did have those hours.
Yeah, but you wanted to do it, Michelle. And I did want to. You were keen to do it. And yeah. Most of us, I mean, I'm awake and not hungover on a Sunday morning, but I'm not sure. I'm not writing anything, love. I should take a leaf out of your book, shouldn't I?
Yeah, I am that type of person. I'm always trying to set myself goals.
So as well as the lions from when you finish at Radio 2 that you're looking forward to, what else are you looking forward to being able to do when you've got your freedom?
You know, I have enjoyed every single moment of it. I mean, it is the finest radio station known to man, apart from Radio Wales, obviously. It is such a family. I mean, working with Wogan was just the most fun. It really wasn't work. And I know lots of people say that, but I've had proper jobs, which I might add I was rubbish at. But it wasn't a job. We just had a laugh. And that makes a big difference. And it's still the same, you know, with Ken and with Chris and all the team. It's a big old laugh, and I've been very, very lucky to do that. So I will be sorry to leave, but as you so accurately pointed out, it will be lovely not to get up at when the sparrows are coughing in my part of South London. Yes, I really will enjoy being able to get up later, and then also being able to go to bed later, because being in bed at 8 o'clock is not a job for a grown woman, really. So I'll enjoy seeing my mates, and I'll be spending more time in Wales. I live in the family home. We've been there for a very long time. We happen to have a field, and I'm very keen on maybe getting a couple of sheep and some stroppy pigs and some bossy hens. I think that's what I'll be doing.
It'll just be like working at Radio 2 then with the animals around.
You know what? I hadn't thought, Stuart, you've completely, I didn't realise that's absolutely the case. I'm just recreating the strangeness of Radio 2 in the morning in a field. I will be a woman outstanding in a field.
Well, we wish you lots of luck and take those happy memories from many years. And thanks for talking to Radio today.
You're very kind to ask me. Thank you.
This is the Radio Today programme. David Lloyd's Radio Moments are coming up. First, to the future and some debunking this week from our radio futurologist.
At james.crid.land and in your favourite podcast app, I'm James Cridland, the radio futurologist. This week, is radio dead? This futurist thinks so.
As much as it's sad to say it, but in terms of the younger demographics, in terms of the future of audio consumption, IP data has won.
Ben Hammersley is a very clever man. He's a futurist and he sports a very fine Victorian bushy moustache and some fancy arm tattoos. He writes for Wired magazine and The Guardian, and the word hipster might have been coined for him. But then he coined the word podcast, which is quite a claim to fame. He spoke at Radio Days Europe this year in Vienna. Radio Days is a great event, if a chilly one for somebody flying direct from the end of Australian summer into sub-zero temperatures. I didn't pack a coat, and perhaps I should have done, because it was bloody freezing. Anyway, Hammers' shtick was, predictably, that radio is dead. He drew parallels with Kodak, who failed to notice how quickly the world was changing. Radio delegates streamed out of his talk slightly deflated. I've just been told that radio is dead, one of them told me, so I'm not quite sure what I'm doing at a radio conference. When technologists proclaim radio as dead, I like quoting the UK's chief scientist, Lord Kelvin, who in the late 1800s confidently predicted that we'd never build a flying machine, that X-rays were a hoax, and that radio had no future. Kelvin later admitted that he was wrong about X-rays, even getting his hand X-rayed, but he never lived long enough to see his predictions about radio proved similarly incorrect. Ben's belief that radio is dead isn't quite as simple as it sounds. By radio, he means linear transmissions, and he believes that audio has a good future. Indeed, he claimed we are living through a golden age of audio. More people are listening than ever before, and the diversity of programmes is better than ever. And there's no doubt that on-demand audio is growing. Podcasting, naturally, but also the use of personalised apps like those from NPR and Capital and Kronehit, and a new personalised radio app that's been promised, again, by the BBC. And currently we're mainly generating audio for these things by taking our linear broadcast and editing it after broadcast into small chunks for these apps. The radio industry so far has been keen not to interfere with live radio. Instead, in the main, digital teams are forced to take pieces produced for one medium and crudely refashion them for another. Our desire to feed the transmitter has taken precedence over our desire to create great audio that works on demand as well as live. I don't believe that linear transmissions are dead, especially in the next 3 years. In most countries, 90% of people listen every single week to linear radio, and that is simply not going to disappear quickly. However, much of live radio is also lazy radio, unpolished and underproduced. The difference between the production values of the New York Times' Daily and a typical morning news programme on the BBC, ABC or NPR is stark. A three-hour chunk of audio is unwieldy and a poor experience when compared to well-produced short-form content. At some point, we need to avoid our own Kodak moment. Rethinking how radio is produced is vital, and better to think about that now instead of when we're forced to. You can get my weekly newsletter at james.crid.land and daily podcast news at podnews.net. And until next time, keep listening.
David Lloyd, Radio Moments.
We start 44 years ago this week at a new voice at Radio 1.
Hank the Knife and the Jet doing so well on the chart at the moment with Guitar King. Well, here on the Paul Burnett Show, although I wasn't here 10 years ago, we're not going to sort of just let it go by. What we're going to do is we're going to play the number one record of every anniversary of Radio 1. In other words, we'll be playing 10 number one records throughout the programme. And here's one. And we'll be playing them in chronological order. It's okay, I've looked it up, and it means in numerical order there. Well, not numerical order. Never mind.
Well, Tuesday we did the chart, just a brief kind of what's new and what's number one. The big chart was going to be at the weekend, but that was when... Well, I meet people now who are at school, and they said everything stopped. Everything stopped for that, to see what was it. Fascinating, really, isn't it? So that was great fun to do.
Paul Burnett, he made his Radio 1 debut this week in 1974. News voices have changed a lot over the years. Let's just compare today's lighter, more contemporary BBC approach on Radio 4.
Theresa May has set out her vision for the UK's future relationship with the EU, saying that not everyone will get what they want from Brexit.
To this one from 1977 on Radio 1.
In Rhodesia, a six-month-old baby was among 28 people killed in guerrilla attacks and fighting over the past 4 days. At home, most domestic airfares are to go up by as much as 7.5% in November. Building firms say too much form filling...
He's not quite at home on that bed, is he? Now, we're thinking about news styles because this week in 1978, Wilfred Pickles died. Wilfred was said to have been the first newsreader not to speak with received pronunciation.
This is the BBC Home and Forces programme. Here's the news. This is Wilfred Pickles reading it. This morning's news of Japan's aggression is of successful countermeasures against the invasion of Malaya. There have also been reports of enemy attacks on Thailand and Hong Kong. At Shanghai, the Japanese have taken over the international waterfront and sunk the British gunboat Petrel.
Wilfred Pickles, who'd come from the Northern Regional Programme, a service which hadn't quite stuck to Reith's belief in what was then the King's English. Reith had the view that posh voices were a good thing, as they would not be, and I quote here, laughed at in any part of the country. Laughed? Laughed? Wilfred died this week 40 years ago. Now the King's English is the Queen's English, or received pronunciation, and BBC English is probably whatever you want it to be. Wilf never survived to see this news station arrive in his beloved Yorkshire this week in 2002.
Brendan and Becky.
Right, so Brendan, you've had your breakfast.
Yeah.
You've had a cup of tea. Are you ready to launch Yorkshire's biggest radio station?
I'm as ready as I'll ever be. Bring it on, let's do it.
Dave Sander.
Cash, cars, holidays. Win them all on Yorkshire's best variety of music and talk.
Al Kelly.
And I'll be here in the afternoon. There's a whole hour of number one hit songs. It's called Real Ones, and it's here between 3 and 4.
The Real Sports Phone In.
Call me and have your say. I'm Emlyn Hughes, and I'll be here. The Real Sports Phone In.
Hello to Real Radio in Yorkshire this week, 16 years ago. It's now Heart. 1994 now, and this week that year, 5 Live goes live.
Good morning. Welcome to a new network, Radio 5 Live. News and sport from the BBC, 24 hours a day. It's 5 o'clock on Monday, the 28th of March. I'm Jane Garvey, and this is Morning Reports. The news headlines, 30 are dead.
The launch of 5 Live 24 years ago. The AM oldies stations attracted huge audiences in their day, despite never appearing on FM. And the gold service from Global was diminished further this week, 4 years ago, as it came off most of its AM and DAB, apart from in the East Midlands and London.
This is Gold.
Four big ones from the golden year this morning, 1972. I hope you enjoyed hearing those. This is the kid. I will have another golden year tomorrow morning, just after the 10 o'clock news.
This is Gold.
And the beat goes on with Jeff Beck.
You're everywhere and nowhere, baby.
This is Gold. Gold
saying farewell to most of the UK this week in 2014, and those oldie stations had attracted over 2 million listeners 10 years before, down to around 750,000 at the time of this change. But now in 2018, thanks to digital, it's back up to over 1 million. Not many programmes last more than 30 years. Midweek on Radio 4 did, launching in 82 with Libby Purvis joining the following year. But this week last year, she hosted her last edition.
Right. We are, sadly, I'm afraid, out of time. So I say goodbye because this has been the last midweek on Radio 4. It has been a blast, I have to say. After nearly 34 years, I do want to thank all the thousands of guests and dozens of programme teams who have made it so much fun and diverse and surprising and always live. So thanks today to Richard.
The final Curtis midweek on Radio 4 with Libby Purvis this week last year. It's 10 years this week since one of the best examples of corpsing ever. And no matter how many years elapse, this will never be forgotten.
Abbey Man also won several Emmys, including one in 1973 for a film which featured a police detective called Kim Kutcher.
Charlotte Green, this week 10 years ago. And finally, Easter sees new beginnings, and so it was for British radio when Radio Caroline began this week in 1964.
Time for the Ronettes.
Ah, the Ronettes, yes, and they certainly mastered the speed link too, didn't they? Even on day one. But like all great radio stations, Caroline's proposition was very clear.
This is Caroline on 199. Radio Caroline playing music all through the day from 6 a.m. up to 6 p.m. in the evening. And the time at this very moment? 1:45 and a half.
Welcome to Radio Caroline this week, 54 years ago. So with Zoe Ball presenting her final Radio 1 breakfast show 17 years ago.
Live this morning from the Radio Theatre with a lovely crowd of friends with us this morning. Oh, yeah.
Century Radio becoming real 9 years ago. And Tom Brown's last Radio 1 chart 40 years ago.
6 o'clock on Radios 1 and 2. My name's Tom Brown. This is the Top 20 as compiled for the BBC by the British Market Research Bureau.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Radio Moments.
Ah, more great memories, especially those Real Radio Yorkshire jingles. And while I remember, check out David's latest episode of the Conversations series featuring Nick Bailey, a fascinating life in radio all around the world, from the early days of Radio Caroline to BFBS and onto radio in Australia and Hong Kong before coming back to launch Classic FM in the 90s. Definitely worth a listen. Thank you this week then to David, to James, to Roy, to Trevor, and our guests Alan Davey, Lynn Bowles, Matt Lissack and Polly James. If you want to be on the Radio Today programme 1 week, get in touch, drop me an email to news@radiotoday.co.uk. If you've got any news for the radio industry as well, that's the same address to send them to. And if you've got any comments about what you've heard on this week's podcast, you can join in the debate on social media. We're at Radio Today. Talk to you next week.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.